Well, welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. I'm Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and William, AC2ZV, will be my co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club's website, and the link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type. But if you would like a simple URL to find it, simply type into your browser puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, and we also have an EchoLink node available for use. Just point your EchoLink application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month, and all this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members, as well as non-members, are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try to provide a cogent answer, and William, AC2ZV, will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here on the technical net or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, William AC2ZV. Good evening, William.
Hey, good evening, Roy. It takes me a minute to check in because right now I'm on EchoLink working on some paperwork, but great to hear you, and I've got some interesting questions for you for later.
Okay, very good, William. I look forward to it, and I hope we have an audience of participating people for a change. It's been kind of quiet during the holiday season. Let me just kind of mention something before we get to questions, though. I didn't have an opportunity to bring it up on the previous technical net because I was unaware of the circumstances, but the ARRL organization that our club is affiliated with and I'm a member of, and that's charging me 43% hike in dues costs for some strange reason, decided to kind of change the bylaws. They were going to make everything much less transparent, which is not a good thing usually. And they were going to do this weird thing where members of the executive board couldn't talk about things that they disagreed with the majority. If the executive board could find a majority for anything, the minority opinion was supposed to shut up and sit down. And also they wanted to kind of obscure some aspects of budgets and not really let the memberships know where the money was going. You know, again, that 43% increase in dues and such. So I did have an opportunity to mention it on my other technical net, the Limark technical net, and I don't know if anyone responded, but enough other people responded that at the most recent ARRL executive board meeting, they tabled the bylaw change. It's listed as bylaw number 46. They tabled it for the time being. So they're not going to talk about it. They're not going to vote for it. They'll have it under the table someplace. Eventually, if they think that we're all asleep at the wheel, they will probably try and pass it again. This is not the first time. About 5 years ago, if anyone is a member of the ARRL, there was a little bit of a turnover of presidents. They appointed a guy president who decided to run it like a business business rather than a organization of amateur radio operators, silly us. Thankfully, there were enough people upset with that they sent them packing. We got another president. But I think the uncontrollable desire of some people in the executive board is to run the ARRL like a profitable business, even though it's a nonprofit organization. And members were just guys who and gals who just paid their dues and shut the heck up. So, eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. So look into it out there. Bylaw 46, for the time being, we're safe, but eternal vigilance. Anyway, that's my 2 cents. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name, your call sign, and whether it's a question or a comment or a topic. Well, William, it looks like we have another quiet night here on the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net.
Yeah, Roy, sounds like we do. I guess we're hearing crickets out there, which brings up my first question to you anyway. Recently, my son went down to Puerto Rico, and it turns out they don't have crickets down in there, but they've got these tree frogs that apparently make a lot of noise, just like the crickets do up here up north. So I was just wondering, have you ever been to Puerto Rico and enjoyed the noise from the tree frogs?
No, William. I've never been to Puerto Rico. I'm trying to think how far south I've been. I've been more southwest. I've been to Texas. I've been to New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, California. But for whatever reason, I never went on the East Coast down south.
Yeah, I used to live down in Texas for quite a while and decided it was time to move because of the way my wife's career was going. She was a dancer and she wanted to come here to New York, so that's where we ended up. Anyway, maybe there's somebody out there that is got a technical question rather than us chit-chatting. We'll be right back at you in a few.
Okay, very good, William. Well, you know, I mean, it's kind of been that type of a season. I think you checked into the 10-meter net this Sunday. Your signal wasn't very strong in my shack, but I recall hearing you. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I was having a very, very long, very, very nice chat with John Pinard, a gentleman who used to be our VE team leader about 5 or 6 years ago. Very little in the way of club participation lately. It's not like I haven't complained about that at the general meetings, but I guess I'll have to complain a little bit more vociferously. But nevertheless, for all the people out there listening, and apparently they don't own a radio or an antenna, for the few who do and would like to ask a question, unless you know everything about radio waves and amateur radio operating and such, I'm sure there are some brilliant people out there. Nevertheless, if you got a question or a comment to make about amateur radio or science in general, I'm open to all kinds of topics, then hit that push to talk button and give me a call sign.
This is KE2CMW. This is my first transmission. I just received my ham radio license recently, and my first transmission is to KCRC.
Okay, very good. Do you have a question today?
I am new to this world and I have tons of questions. I'm not very technical at this. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a regular guy trying to learn something new. And when I was studying for the exam, I noticed that there is a lot of information. There is a lot of science involved with this. And it's kind of exciting. And before I got my call sign, I listened to KCRC a couple of times. I wasn't able to respond to anything. And I think it was 10 days ago, I went to UTS in New Jersey, Clark, New Jersey, to get my license. And everybody, all the Almas were very helpful, and they gave me a lot of information, and...
Well, that's great to hear. You have to start somewhere. We all started at the very beginning, and I understand there's a lot of things at the very beginning. You're not quite sure exactly what question you should ask. You know, you have to know a little bit of something to be able to ask a lot about something. So I understand it, but I mean, if there's anything that's you're wondering about at this early point of the hobby, feel free to let it rip, and I'll see if I can help.
My first question would be your suggestion regarding the first radio. There's a lot of information. Right now I'm using a regular Baofeng UV5R, and it's just convenient right now, but it's just a handheld, very limited. What is your first suggestion as an amateur to use a ham radio?
Okay, I mean, that's a good subject for discussion, and it depends upon the individual. It really depends what you're looking to get out of the hobby at this point, and you may not have enough experience to quite know what you really want out of it. At this point, I assume you have a technician's license, so you can operate on phone, on UHF and VHF, and all the upper frequencies, and you have a small portion of the phone band on 10 meters, where the club has a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock on 28.380 megahertz. But I would assume you would probably like to focus in on UHF, VHF for the time being, and repeaters and other types of things. Baofengs are nice, disposable handy talkies. We joke about them, but we all at least own one. I knew one gentleman who I think collected a dozen, which was, I think, a little bit too much of a somewhat good thing. They're inexpensive, they're disposable, you don't have to worry about what happens if it breaks, what happens if you drop it, what happens if you lose it. You know, I mean, it costs less than the leather cover of some of my Japanese handy talkies. And again, you got to kind of figure out what you want. Do you want the incredible mobility of a handy talkie, albeit low power output? If so, then you might want to look for a somewhat more expensive, more functional handy talkie. If you're interested in fusion repeaters, you might want a fusion capable handy talkie, like the Yaesu bunch of handy talkies. If you were interested in, say, DMR, the Motorola type of repeaters, you'd be more interested in something like an Anytone 878, which is a very nice, well-made DMR type of a handy talkie. If you're more interested in somewhat more power, or operating in your car, or operating in your house, you'd then kind of look for a mobile radio as opposed to a handy talkie. And again, it sort of depends on what features you want. Do you just want analog UHF, VHF? Do you want Fusion? Do you want E-Star? Do you want DMR? Depending upon those criteria, it would change the answer of what kind of a mobile radio you have. I have an FDM 400. I think that went out of production. Now it's FDM 500, I think. That has fusion. It's a dual band. It's a fusion. I think it goes up to about 40 watts, maybe 50. And it's a nice desktop radio. And you could use it in the car as well. So again, it depends. Do you want to be very mobile? If so, then you might be looking for a more sturdy type of a handy talkie. If you're looking for something that can fit in your car or your home and put out 10 times the power that a handy talkie could, then you're looking for a mobile.
Thank you. Again, this is KU2CMW. Somebody suggested Bridgecom systems, they do DMRs, but my first thing is to learn about the whole system first, one step at a time. I'm not rushing, and I just want to learn more before I jump in to buy expensive materials, but just one step at a time. I'm also interested in learning Morse code, to be honest. It was kind of, like we were talking with my daughter, she's also interested in it too. So I said, maybe we can do it together. There's a lot to learn, to be honest. Interesting. I just want to do one step at a time.
I understand. Well, getting back to the first part of your comment, Bridgecom is not a member. Bridgecom is a distributor or a retail slash distributor. They buy in lots from Chinese manufacturers. For the most part, I think they sell Anytone radios, which are fine. I have an Anytone 878. I think I mentioned it to you. It's kind of like the go-to DMR handy talkie. If you talk to people on DMR, it's not at all uncommon that they'll tell you that they're using an Anytone 878. So they're fine handy talkies. They're well made, good quality in my humble opinion. They are not inexpensive. They're not like a Baofeng. You're not going to find any for 30, 40, 50 bucks. They're about 210 or so, and I believe the Chinese manufacturer is going to be raising the price on them any day now. So that's certainly an option. That would be for UHF, VHF, and DMR. And you could either get Bridgecom sells the Anytone handy talkies, and they also sell the Anytone mobile radios. So it's up to you. Your second point is interesting. Oh, Morse code. When the FCC finally did away with the Morse code requirements, a lot of the old-time guys were very depressed that this would harken the death of Morse code and CW, but not at all. It's still very popular. I think they sell more high-end keys now than they ever did before. There are a lot of pieces of software, you can just Google it, that can train you. There are different learning philosophies where you can run software on a cell phone or on a computer, and it will introduce a few letters at a time and jumble them around and offer you practice and slowly introduce more and more letters and numbers and then increase the speed. So you could do it yourself. Using a lot of different applications and or software. The old days we had to buy cassettes or records that had Morse code. Thankfully, those days are gone. And matter of fact, not too far away, there's a place called, I think, the Long Island CW Club, which specializes in helping people learn CW. I don't know if they have classes, but they probably have little nets on the radio where people send CW back and forth to each other. So you might want to Google Long Island CW Club. You have to just stick with it. If you're easily distracted and you come back to it a month or two later, you tend to lose everything that you gain. So if you do a little bit each day, that's probably the best, but you have to stick to it for the long haul. Well, you're more than welcome. That's what this net is all about. We're here to try and help people. If you have any questions or want to just try out some ideas that you came up with and you want a second opinion, I mean, it's not like I came off the mountain with stone tablets, but I've kind of looked into many aspects of this hobby over the years and more than happy to share what I've gleaned.
In-person meetings that we can attend. I live close by. I live in the island. I was wondering if it's possible to attend one of the meetings in person. I mean, the people one-on-one.
Yeah, well, at this point, we still don't have a meeting place. We're somewhat optimistic. We used to meet at the Methodist Hospital, and we've been speaking to people in charge of that there, and they've suggested that although they shut things down for COVID, they might be rethinking that early this year, so we might have a place available. At this point, we don't. Right now, we're doing virtual Zoom meetings. We might end up with hybrid meetings where some people come in person and other people are there virtually on a Zoom application. But if you're interested in attending any of our Zoom meetings, if you contact me, AC2GS, via email and identify yourself, I'll be more than happy to give you a link to the Zoom meeting.
Right now on your website, there is a membership section as well. I'll be able to contact you at AC2GS at Gmail, you said, regarding that one as well.
I don't think I have that type of a Gmail account. You could just, I'm on QRZ, so you could see my email address. I have a lot of email addresses. You could just send it to my call sign, alphacharlie2gulfsierra@alphacharlie2gulfsierra.com, and it'll get to me. Don't use the phonetics for the email address. Just use the letters.
I'll contact you and then get more information, and we'll take it from there. I will attend.
KG2VA with a comment.
ETS in New Jersey. I think this Friday they'll have a meeting. I'll go there and then meet with some of the ham radio users to ask questions face to face. One of the old-timers, I'm new to this, so I prefer to meet people in person and get answers easily, and I think I'll be able to learn more that way.
Okay, that's certainly understandable. I wish you luck with that. Most of our club members are members of other clubs. I'm a member of the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club as well, and I think I mentioned earlier I do another technical net for that club on Sunday nights on their repeater. So the more the merrier. It's not a matter of competition. We're all out to help people, and that's a good thing.
The one that you mentioned on Sundays, the repeaters, can I find it on the repeaterbook.com?
You can find a whole bunch of repeaters all over the place that don't really respond on the repeater book. The W2VL, which is the repeater that I use for the Limark Technical Net, is a Sunday night at 8 p.m. Its frequency is 146.850. I think the PL tone is 135, but you may have to check. But just look up W2VL. It's all over the place. They're a kind of famous local club. They have a lot of different repeaters. They have repeaters for 2 meters and 70 centimeters and 220 and 900 and 1200 gigahertz. They have DMRs. They have fusion repeaters. They probably have more repeaters than they have people who talk on the repeaters.
I will definitely check that repeater, and hopefully we'll be able to program it on the Borfang. It took me a while to program KCRC, but I'm learning. Like I said, one step at a time.
One of the many problems with Baofeng is it's not very easy to field program it. I used to give out little booklets when we had in-person club meetings that you could put in your wallet that were helpful. You'd be interested if you got a programming cable, a little USB programming cable sometimes is included in the purchase of the Baofengs. You can download a free program called Chirp, C-H-I-R-P, and it lets you enter repeaters via software, and then you can download that into the Baofeng without having to push a lot of buttons.
I will check that, and I think I did a good job. I'm talking to you right now. I was able to program KCRC's repeaters, and at first I was kind of worried if my transmission was going to go through or not, but it was successful.
Yes, indeed. You were very successful in programming it. You got the PL tone correct. Occasionally, people sometimes get PL tones wrong or forget to enter the PL tone. And, you know, that's a kind of privacy lock that is designed primarily so that if you have two repeaters that are close enough for that propagation conditions can allow one transmission into both repeaters, the PL tone is another measure to not trigger the transmitter of the repeater. You didn't mean to. So, you did it right. I'm just saying that if you were interested in, say, writing a bunch of repeaters down and downloading them in your Baofeng and just being able to click from one to the other without manually entering it in the keyboard, you could use something like Chirp to do it. There are more expensive ways. There's a company called RTS. It's a commercial company that makes very good software, but being a business, they charge you money. Chirp is free. You just download it. Some people have better luck than others, but I just offer it to you as another option to make life a little bit easier with your Baofeng.
Thank you. How is the programming mode for XDM 500? Is it manual or does it come with a software pre-programmed?
I think primarily it can be manual, it can be programmed. I do not think they throw in a programming language for it. So, and one of the things I particularly like about, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm shilling for RTS software. They offer modules for all kinds of different radios, and they use the same database. So you can enter a series of repeaters, and you could use that same database for the list of repeaters to download to the FTM 500, to a Baofeng, to an ICOM 7100, to just about any radio capable of operating on UHF, VHF. You have to buy the individual modules for those radios, but you can transfer the same exact list of repeaters from one radio to another. But you know, it's not as difficult to manually insert frequencies and repeaters into the memory of the Yaesu radios. Baofengs are particularly obtuse and obscure when it comes to that. It's doable, but it's a bigger headache. But, you know, it wouldn't be a headache to enter them in manually if you had to. But like I said, I pay a couple extra bucks, and I have the RTS modules to most of the radios that I have, and I could, you know, adjust and modify my repeater list and then upload it to all of my radios so that they're in sync.
How to do this, how to do that, because, like I said, there's a lot to learn, and sometimes you dive in without knowing where to start, and I don't want to get lost in the process. I just want to meet somebody who can tell me at least, like, the bullet points, do this, do this, do this, and then next step, next step, this one, you're going to do this, like that. I was wondering, because I live in Staten Island, I couldn't find an active repeater in my area or a club.
Well, I know there used to be a Staten Island amateur radio club. I think COVID kind of knocked the heck out of them. So I don't know if they're active anymore. Joining clubs is a good thing. I mean, basically what you're talking about is mentorship. In amateur radio, the term very often used is Elmer. I guess taken from some story someplace where a guy whose first name was Elmer mentored a new ham. And it's a big part of this hobby. Any good amateur radio operator is more than willing to assist and be as best an Elmer to other people as he can. That's the reason for this technical net. That's the reason for a lot of technical nets, to help people out, because we all started out and we all needed help. And the old adage is, you know, pass it forward. So you got help from some people. Unfortunately, some of them have gone on to become silent keys. They've passed away, and you can't make it up to them, but so you make it up to the next guy who's asking the questions that you used to. So, I mean, almost anyone would be more than happy to help mentor you. It's a good reason why people join clubs. Sometimes it's people who meet. Sometimes it's people who you talk to on the radio. Sometimes it's people that you exchange emails with. You know, YouTube is kind of somewhat dangerous. YouTube can be very useful. I find, unfortunately, about 30% of YouTube videos on amateur radio are not well made and full of errors. And it's difficult, unless you know it, which ones are the good ones and which are not so good ones. It's kind of always going to be that. There's always a couple of very well-meaning people out there who are confused about reality, and they give bad advice. But I find, you know, if you have a good built-in BS meter, you could kind of read those guys who are just kind of acting out in some weird way and promoting things and trying to blow themselves up. And, you know, you can figure out who gives you good advice and who gives you not so good advice. But, you know, clubs are great sites for it. Nets are decent. You make contact. That's how I have met many great people over different repeaters and on HF. This is a communications hobby. So it's designed to communicate. So you could use it to get an education as well.
Thank you so much for your time. This was very nice. I don't know how long I've been here, but like 30, 40 minutes. And my first transmission. I'm very excited, and I'm happy to be on this computer.
Well, you're welcome. You know where to find us on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m. We have our technical net. The club has an info net every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. And if you ever get together something that works on 10 meters, we have our 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz. So good luck, and I hope you come back and ask more questions, and I hope we have an opportunity to talk more down the line.
I'm sure I'll be back. I've been listening to you even before I got my call sign, and now I'll be able to talk to you. Again, this is KE2CMW. Just to make sure, your call sign is KC2ES or GC? I missed that one.
It's Alpha Charlie. That's A as in Albert and C as in Charlie. The number 2, Gulf Sierra. G is in Given. S is in Sam.
Thank you. I'm still Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra.
Yes, Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra.
Again, thank you so much. I have to go, and I will finish my transmission now, and I will try to send you an email. Hopefully, it'll reach you. And in 2 weeks, I'll come back to this repeater. And Tuesday, 9 p.m., I don't know if I can make it or not. But Wednesdays at 9 o'clock, I'm available usually. In 2 weeks, I'll hopefully meet with you again.
Okay, very good. It wouldn't be in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today is the first Wednesday when we have our meetings. So because the 31st is next Wednesday, we'll be back on the 14th. So that will be 3 weeks.
So it's February the 14th, 9 o'clock.
Yes, the 14th at 9 o'clock. So, 73, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to future conversations.
Thank you. Again, this is KE2CNW. Over.
Yeah, could you give me your first name again?
First name is spelled C-U-N-E-Y-T, but it's pronounced June 8th. Like the month June and number 8th. June 8th.
Okay, very good.
Why listening?
Say again, there was a lot of strange noise in the background.
KE2CIY, listening.
Okay, KE2CIY, you're free to listen, you're free to ask questions. That's the point of our little technical net.
Thank you very much. This is KE2CIY. My name is Sam. I've been listening for the last, I would say, 20 minutes. Really appreciate the technical talk. This is my actually second day operating after getting my license.
Ah, congratulations. You've just entered a brave new world. It's a real fun hobby. I'm a big fan. I especially appreciate not only the depth, but the breadth of it. There's so many different ways to express yourself in this hobby. You could play around with microwave on mountaintops, all the way to very low frequency with antennas dragging the ground for kilometers at a time, at a length, and everything in between. So welcome to the hobby. I hope you enjoy it as I do.
Could not hear your last transmission. KE2CIY.
Okay. Hopefully, you'll be able to hear this. Well, just congratulations on getting licensed. I find this a great hobby. There's a great depth and breadth to it. You can express yourself in all manner of different ways. There's very high frequencies of microwaves. There's very low frequencies that used to be used by submarines until they gave it up for satellites and other fancier technology, and everything in between. So I hope you find this hobby as enjoyable as I have. And as I mentioned to Junaid, we're here the second and fourth Wednesday of every month in case you have any questions that you need answered. Well, once again, I continue to be AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the King Scotty Radio Club Technical Net. Anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, we're open for business. Just hit that push to talk, give me your call sign and your first name.
The repeater signal is coming in very garbled. I can't hear you. I don't know if it's something on my end. KE2CIY.
Not quite sure what's going on. Some of your signal is being interfered with, too, so there might be some electrical equipment or someone might be trying to double. It's difficult to say, but that's some of the possibilities. I don't know what kind of radio you got, an antenna you got. You know, you might need to kind of adjust it a little bit. If it's a handy talkie, you might want to move around the antenna a bit and see how it works, if it gets better. But I don't know what might be interfering with the signals.
Control.
Yes.
Coming in very staticky. I don't know if it's a problem on my end. going to turn on a different receiver to see if it's my radio that's making the noise. K-E-2-C-I-Y.
Okay, give it a try. I was having a conversation with June 8 without much of a problem, and William AC2ZV. I don't remember if he was on Echo Link or on the radio. So you give another radio a try.
Yeah, the receiver, the signal was coming in very staticky as well.
Okay. One thing that you have to make sure that you're not doing is sometimes people don't set things up as a repeater. And they're listening not to the output of the repeater, they're listening to the input of me in my little shack in Brooklyn, which doesn't have a strong a signal. So it's within the realm of possibility that you're not listening for the output signal, the repeater. You might be listening to the input signal that I'm putting out to the repeater. Well, we'll give Sam an opportunity to check on the settings of his radio. That happens sometimes, you know. People kind of have their radios set, and if you're listening to a guy relatively near you, you don't really discern the difference. You know, it sounds fine because you're listening to them directly. You're basically going simplex. But in a lot of cases, repeater transmissions are a lot stronger than people sending signals to the repeaters. So it's been known to happen. We'll see. Anyway, once again, I continue to be AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Anyone has any questions or comments to make tonight, please hit that push to talk and give me your call sign.
To CIY here, the signal from the repeater is coming in very well again.
Oh, okay. That's good. I mean, you know, it's always nice to kind of know the cause for things. When signals kind of go in and out, it's a lot more difficult to figure out exactly what went wrong at what point. But I, nevertheless, glad to hear the signal sounds better now.
Very good. How is my signal coming in?
You're fine. Full quieting here.
I'm operating out of the house with a mag mount antenna on top of a baking sheet in a room. The antenna's not even outside, and I'm pumping out about 20 watts right now.
Okay, that's very good for that type of a situation. It really depends upon where the repeater is. Fortunately, KC2RC is, you know, in Brooklyn. I assume you're in Brooklyn, too. So you can get away with more. I had great problems trying to communicate with Limark when I was starting out. I would put the similar type of antenna outside my window on the first floor of a two-floor family house, two-family house, and the signal was terrible, but I had to go all the way to the Nassau County line. That's where their repeaters are. So I'm glad to hear that the cookie plate worked. I tell people that sometimes people get away with using a mag mount on their refrigerator. Sometimes it's best if you have one of those air conditioners with a big butt out the window or out the wall cutting. You can stick it on that, and sometimes that's a very effective antenna. With UHF and VHF, the most important things, Dick K2RAW, who used to run the Limark Technical Net, used to often say, there's three important things about getting out on UHF, VHF. And he said they were elevation, elevation, and elevation.
Brings me to my technical question, actually.
Sure, let it rip.
So as of right now, I'm literally sitting in a room about, let's say, 3 feet away from my antenna on the baking sheet. I do have an attic that's right above me. And what I was thinking of doing is actually drilling a couple of holes and running the coax up to the attic and then attaching the metal baking sheet to the attic rafters with some wood screws and then putting the mag mount on top of that. See, so I can get it maybe another 10 feet up higher in the air, see if that would improve anything.
That would be a good idea for a bunch of different reasons. As long as you roof it with metal shingles or something, then the higher you can get it, the better, and the farther away from you, the better as well. RF isn't that terribly dangerous. Most RF problems are heat generation. So cell phones that are right up against you, the side of your face, the most dangerous place with enclosed heat problems is your eyeballs. But people are afraid of cell towers and they say that they're allergic and such. But no, I think that would be a very good idea. You certainly would get out farther if you raised it an additional 10 feet and, not too close from any metallic shielding. Unfortunately or fortunately, my house was built in the late 50s before plasterboard became a thing. So they used the old method, which is chicken wire. They would staple chicken wire on the 2x4s, and then they would apply actual plaster. And that gives you a kind of Faraday cage that my rooms are somewhat RF-proof. So I can't kind of use antennas inside my house. I have to put them someplace nearby, either on the roof or out the windows.
Have your antenna set up now?
Well, antennas kind of unfortunately come and go. Right now, I am talking to you via a Yagi that is pointed at our repeater. It's on my roof with about 30 feet of elevation.
So, yeah, I can hear you really, I guess, 5x5 is the operative term.
Yeah, there's a few variations. I mean, full quieting probably suffices. With FM transmissions, when you reach a certain amplitude, it captures the receiver entirely, and most of the background noise drops away. That's what everyone's kind of looking for. That's why when you listen to signals of lower amplitude where you don't have the FM capture, there's background noise interfering with the transmissions.
Understood. Thank you. So, my roof is asphalt shingles. It's a frame house, all wood and drywall. Should I be concerned about grounding this sort of jury-rigged mag mount antenna setup if it's up in the attic under a wood and asphalt shingle roof? KE2CIY.
Well, I don't want to disparage the idea of grounding. Most good practices suggest that you ground your equipment against lightning strikes or static discharges. But, if you're going to keep it inside the house, the chances for and Brooklyn is not really a high lightning area. If you lived in other places further on Long Island, it might be well warranted. And there's a lot of guys out there who float their ground, and they don't have any disasters. So, you might have a little bit more static electricity show up on your receiver's front end, but I wouldn't bother worrying about proper grounding until or unless you start to mount things outside, because then the question becomes, where exactly are you going to ground it to? You should never ground it inside your house. So then you would have to have some kind of external ground, and chances are it wouldn't take that path. It would take the closest path to ground in your house, which is in your house. So I don't think I'd worry that until you start to build antennas that are above your roof instead of below them.
Understood. Thank you very much. I was a little bit concerned about the logistics of grounding. This is a my QTH is Staten Island, by the way, not Brooklyn. So I'm sincerely shocked at the fact that I'm making the repeater. But this is a sort of a narrow and tall townhouse. It's one of the tallest houses on the block. That's why the question of lightning protection came up in the first place. But everything that I'm going to set up, which includes a project for a 10-meter antenna, is going to be under the roof. It's going to be inside the house.
yourself. Okay. Well, the signal is excellent for Staten Island. Staten Island is a very hilly valley type of area. So I had a very good friend who used to live on a hill on Staten Island, and his signals were great. There's another gentleman who's a regular for my 10-meter net who unfortunately lives in a valley, and he just collides with every ground structure imaginable before he reaches me, so I can barely hear him, unfortunately. So I would assume that in addition to the height of your building, it's probably built more on the hilly aspects of Staten Island rather than the valleys?
Incorrect. I'm on the plain right next to the water.
Next to water is a very good thing. You get a lot of good ground wave propagation off of bodies of water. So that's not bad either. It's being in the middle, it's being in a valley where you got a hill to one side and a hill to the other side and a hill to the other side, and you just kind of bound in there. That's where things like near vertical incident sky wave antennas really benefit you. So, you know, being right on the coast, near the water, that's a good place for transmissions.
Thank you very much. At this point, since I'm operating this kind of, as I use the word, jury-rigged setup, before I put the antenna up in the attic, how concerned should I be about being in the same room with the transmitting antenna at 20 watts?
Well, you know, like I said before, it's probably not a good long term, although you'll bump into guys who just string dipoles on the wall of their shack and live to speak of it. Radio waves really are not that much of a problem. I know some people get very frightened about a lot of things. They're non-ionizing radiation, so they don't damage cell structure. They don't produce radical chemicals that rip apart your cells. The only real thing that RF can do is heat you up. And the sun probably does a better job of doing that than any 20-watt transmitter. So all things being equal, although it's always to be safe than sorry, don't worry yourself too much. It's just, in the long run, it'll be better for you if you move it up to the attic and give it less opportunity, because the RF can also get into electrical equipment nearby you and you know, screw up computers and such, depending upon how well they're designed and how well they're shielded.
Got it. Thank you very much for the peace of mind. I'm a lawyer by trade, which means that it's literally my job to always look for the absolute worst case scenario.
I understand that, and you know, there's a good, you know, it's always good to kind of do that and then kind of pull back a little bit and find a happy medium. So I wish you good luck with the hobby. You and June 8, two new hams. I hope you find it as enjoyable as I do. And, you know, if you ever need to bounce an idea off of someone, feel free. I'm in the book, and I'm here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month. You can email me as well. You can find me on QRZ, and I'd be more than happy to help.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. K2CIY.
Good. Thanks for coming. You know where we are, 73, and I hope to talk to you down the line.
73 to you as well. I'm going to try to join in 3 weeks. Hopefully by then my attic setup will be set up, and I may have additional questions about that. Thanks again, and have a great evening. K2CIY.
Thank you. Thanks for participating tonight. I wish you all the luck and loads of fun. It's there's so many different ways of getting into this hobby and diving deep if you're so inclined. So 73, and I look forward to our next conversation in 3 weeks. This is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We still have a TechNet puzzle. You can see it by going over to our website. You can type in puzzle.kc2rc.com. It is a schematic, so I can't really read it to you. You have to look at the illustration. But it's a nice little question. Basically, the question goes, the circuit diagram shows an oscillator. The function of a capacitor that's labeled C relies upon the ability of a capacitor to do one of the four possible answers. And answer A is to prevent direct current entering further circuit stages. B is prevent alternating current entering further circuit stages. C is to provide the correct biasing of the transistor, and D is smooth the alternating currents. So if anyone wants to play the little TechNet puzzle, please feel free.
C2ZV with a comment.
Yes, William.
C doesn't appear to be connected to anything, so if it's not connected to anything, I think it kind of ruins the puzzle.
I'm a little confused. What do you mean? Well, C is a label for that capacitor that's right above it.
AC2ZV, yeah, but these things talk about further stages and stuff. So that little dot at the end of the capacitor is supposed to mean further circuit stages. Is that what that means?
Yeah, basically, the bottom wire is the ground. The top wire in the schematic is the power, where the positive voltage potential is. And the capacitor labeled C goes to an output stage of that circuit.
AC2ZV, yeah, I understand that. I just wanted to get some more hints out there to the populace out at large. And see if anybody has a guess. I have my guess, and it's going to be A.
Okay, I'll throw it out to anyone who might be listening tonight. If they have access to a computer, they can just click puzzle.kc2rc.com and go to the very top question and look at the schematic. If anyone wants to offer an answer to this TechNet puzzle, please hit that push to talk. Okay, I guess no one wants to play the puzzle other than you, William. You are quite correct. It is A. It is blocking direct current from going as the oscillator's output. You don't really want a DC bias on your oscillator's output, so it's always good to have a car that's blocking the DC. So that's the answer. The answer is A. Answer B, preventing alternate current from entering further in the circuit change stage, that's kind of absurd because it's an oscillator circuit. You're generating a alternating signal, so you don't want to block the alternating signal. And if you did want to block the alternating signal, you would put a shunt bypass capacitor to ground, as you can see above it for the power rail stage of the circuit. So B is absurd. C is provide current biasing for the transistor. Well, the biasing for the transistor is taking place on the left side of the circuit, not the right side of the circuit. So that's absurd. And smoothing the alternating current doesn't really make much sense because that's not how smoothing capacitors work, and they don't you don't use them on oscillators. You might use them on the ripple of output of a power supply. So, if you know basically how things work, A is the best answer, and A is the correct answer. So I thank you, William. You get a gold star for tonight.
Yeah, AC2ZV, yeah, thanks a lot for that, Roy. You know, in looking at this circuit, one of the questions I was wondering was whether or not you could actually pump enough signal into C to actually modulate the oscillator up there, and then the upper sections, I think, would be going towards an antenna, possibly, or to an amplifier stage or something like that. So do you think it'd be possible to pump something into C and then modulate the oscillator?
2VA, did I drop off?
Did I drop off?
2ZV, yeah, I think maybe he did.
Okay, hopefully you hear me, because it looks like I'm transmitting. I just was saying that you don't really want to pump anything into the oscillator stage, because you'll produce harmonic distortions, or you might have the oscillator totally fail, and you wouldn't want to inject a DC bias, because that's not how amplitude modulation works. What you probably want to do is feed the output of the oscillator into a completely separate amplifier stage and feed the amplifier gain controls with the audio output of your microphone. Then you'd get at least amplitude modulation.
Yeah, I appreciate your answer. I believe that's just absolutely correct. I was just thinking, well, maybe this was some kind of weird cheat Baofeng circuit where you could like pump it in there and get something out, you know. Not seeing any values, it seems like it might be possible if you put some kind of swing into the oscillations, but I don't think it's the greatest of ideas.
Yeah, in general, you want to protect your oscillator as best you can. It's a somewhat fragile construct, because what you're looking for is a relatively harmonic-free oscillator that is stable. A amplifier usually doesn't go into oscillation, so you want to kind of force an amplification circuit into self-oscillation, and you want to do it in a controlled manner without too many harmonics that require excessive filtering. So it's always probably the best idea to have an isolated oscillation circuit and then deal with changing that oscillating signal on an isolated stage further along.
AC2ZV. Yeah, I totally agree. It turns out that when I was a microwave radio engineer back in the day, we used to have these bricks, which were the main oscillators of the transmitter, and these bricks were then had a capacitor similar to this hooked into the oscillator. So there was actually a VF input into the oscillator where you could modulate the oscillator. And then we had a service channel that would operate independent of the transmission gear, because, you know, all the transmission was way high in the microwave region, and there was filters, and it was all FM. And so if you threw a little AM on top of the FM for the service channel, nobody knew you were basically talking repeater to repeater. So thus, TEX had a way of having the service channel capability to talk back to the head end and different places when we were at repeaters without interrupting communications and having to use phones. That's why I thought maybe that was that kind of a circuit.
Oh, okay. I don't know if, you know, like I said, I mean, engineers like to tinker around with all kinds of things. I remember when it came to Limark's repeater, the guy who was pretty much in charge of building it, maintaining it, was Eric, KE2EJ, who was a television broadcast engineer. And, you know, when he was working on the repeater during the old technical nets, every so often he would tap on the chassis and you would hear it in the repeater output. It produced a ringing. And, you know, so engineers like to find tricks around circuits.
AC2ZV, yeah, microphonics are certainly a way to do it. You can actually tap out Morse code on the top of a Klystron.
Yeah, I don't think Eric ever did Morse code. He just did a quick couple of taps to let people know he was once again drudging up to the repeater site to fix something or other.
You know, more power to these guys that go out to the repeater sites, man. They're out in the middle of nowhere, and it's cold, and there's this giant lightning rod out there that you get to stand next to. Anyway, more power to them.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's a thankless task, unfortunately, because for the most part, people don't commend them when things are working. They just complain when they're not. Last Sunday, actually, it was a Saturday. Limark, which links together their repeaters using internet, their modem went down, and they needed to contact the ISP to come in and swap out the modem. They were able to get the guy to come Sunday, which was a good thing, because otherwise they would not have their IRLP link, they would not have their Echo link, they would not have their All-Star link, and they wouldn't have their link with their other repeaters. So it's a thankless task. So I appreciate repeater technical committees, you know, that do all the hard work. And, you know, with LIMARC, it's a lot of hard work because, as I mentioned, they probably have more repeaters than they have participants on repeaters. They have two VHF stations, one UHF FM station, DMR fusion, and, you know, 900 megahertz, 1200 megahertz, 220. They've really gone crazy with repeaters there.
AC2ZV, well, hopefully they have the money within the membership to pay the power bills and stuff and whatever leases they have to keep that going. It's a pretty expensive habit.
It's a good thing that it's a thriving club with about 350 members or so. They have a bunch of ham fests a year. I think the nut that they pay to just kind of rent all the space for these repeaters, because no one's giving it to them for free, sound like $4,000 or $5,000 a year.
That's a big nut.
Yeah, it certainly is. We would go bankrupt after about 3 months of that.
Okay, well, it's pretty great chatting with you tonight, Roy. It's getting a little late. Maybe somebody else out there has got a technical question to see if they can stump the band here.
Certainly. Anyone out there, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is still the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're still open for business, so if anyone has any questions or comments tonight before we call it a night, then please feel free, hit that push-to-talk button and say your piece. Okay, I think we've exhausted everyone, but I will give them one last chance. If anyone is still out there and they still have some questions or comments to make for tonight before we shut it all down, this is going to be your last chance. So if you do have something, hit that push to talk.
Hey, Roy, this is KU2VA. Just want to say thanks for the technical net.
KU2VA. I've been listening the entire time. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, you're quite welcome. My pleasure. I'm glad that we had people tonight. I hope that the holiday kind of absence is now over. So I thank everyone who listened. I thank everyone who participated. But once again, I give people the opportunity before we call it a night. If you got any more questions or comments, please feel free.
KU2ZV, by the way, Max has got a field day coming up. Looks like it's going to happen. He's going to go meet everybody in the park. Max, maybe Roy will let you give a chance to last plug there.
Yeah, Max, please, feel free.
Sure thing. I was going to jump in a little bit earlier. This is KG2VA. We are going to have a shortened winter field day activity. The weather seems like it's going to be in the 40s. Cloudy, hopefully no rain. So we're planning to meet up at a location that's actually posted on the Winter Field Day website. If you go to Winter Field Day, Radio Winter Field Day, you'll find it. If you zoom in on Prospect Park, you'll see the location. We're planning to show up there around 1 o'clock p.m. I'm going to have, probably just doing VHF and UHF because I don't think I'm going to get the HF radio I was hoping to get before that, but, you know, maybe some other folks will bring their equipment. And that's it. We're going to try it out, see how it goes. Try to operate with probably handhelds for the most part. But anybody who wants to come, you're welcome to join. And we'd love to see you there. KU2VA.
2ZV with a comment.
Feel free to comment, William.
I'm busy like 10 to 2, but I'm out coming back home after that. So I'm not sure when you guys come home. But I'll be listening to Echolink and stuff. You know, in the afternoon and check an email. So if you guys decide on a location to meet up after the event, I might be able to meet you someplace outside Prospect Park. I haven't come up with any good recommendations for a place to meet yet, but maybe somebody's got some, and if you get one, why don't you please let us all know where that is and roughly what time you think it'll be.
Sure thing. If I do pick something, and probably be on, I think you mentioned on the F side of things, on the east side of the, or west side of the park. So we'll see how it goes, how cold people get, and how it looks.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Back to Roy, net control.
Okie doke. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York, and we meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be February 7th. It's held via teleconference. Club members will be emailed with details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, you can look it up in QRZ, with some form of identification for the required link. And although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues anywhere from 9 to 10 o'clock, depending upon the number points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater, and this technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesdays of each and every month at 9 p.m., and we also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet as well as our 10-meter net. Just point your browser at stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club, and an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the hosts of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time for us to roll this all up and shut it down, but we'll be back to do it again February 14th, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, William AC2ZV. Without you guys, I would just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk to you again down the line.